online 24/7 and worldwide in radio.
Welcome to Insanity Radio special of the SRA podcast on In Radio. I'm Charlotte Mason, station manager, and for the next half an hour, we'll be bringing you interviews from our training day in February. I'll hand over to Beth Carr, our head of training, to tell you all about it.
On Saturday, the 25th of February, Insanity Radio hosted our annual training day, welcoming seven industry professionals to Royal Holloway's Arts Building. We spoke to three of them during the day to bring you the best tips on jobs and memories from their student radio days.
I'm Tom, and I sat down with two of our speakers to chat about all things radio. But first, who are our first guests?
So I'm David Walker, and I am a producer for TalkSport. I produce the afternoon shows, which is Hawksby and Jacobs, 1 till 4 weekday afternoons.
I'm Dave Cribb. I produce the equivalent show on Talk Radio, John Holmes, and I run a comedy production company called The Rubber Chicken.
The first question anyone asks is how you get into radio. How did Dave and Dave do it?
So I think they're probably both quite similar, but I did student radio at university, which was Nottingham Trent University. The station was called Fly FM. I didn't do radio for my course or have any real ambitions to be in radio before I went to university, but found the station, got involved because it was something fun to do, really enjoyed it, and at some point it kind of took over my life at university, and I decided that that was what I wanted to try and do. So when I left university, I sent loads of emails to people I'd met and looked up addresses of people and got some work experience at various stations around the country, and sort of had a few months sort of working out what I was good at and really what I liked to do, and eventually found my way to TalkSport, did work experience there, and kind of hung about and have stayed there ever since.
Yes, it's very similar. I didn't necessarily want to do radio. I had no idea that I wanted to do radio. I went to university, did student radio there. At Nottingham, again, the rival to David. It seems to be the path of our lives so far. And then I ended up getting work experience at BBC Nottingham while I was there, just a sort of speculative application. And then, as you can do when you sort of get into a station, I ended up working my way up, making teas and coffees, answering phones, and then doing a bit of producing and a bit of editing.
But was their route into their current roles planned?
So I ended up doing sports radio at BBC Nottingham, and then the very short version of the quite long-winded story is I went to Five Live to do sport. Five Live got a new comedy programme, which I ended up working on because I was the one in that day that knew how to use the studio. And then I ended up doing comedy after that and haven't done sport for 6 years now. So completely different. Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah, I mean, I've, as so many people do, I've been making it up as I go along. You know, you get there and you get the job that you're sort of given, like low level sort of work experience stuff. You're kind of doing anything. You're making teas, you're, you know, fixing the printer, doing menial tasks, and then you just sort of work out, right, what's the next step up? Like, is it being assistant producer, and then you go to producer, whatever. And you know, yeah, kind of, I'm, you know, being a producer is kind of the end game for me at the moment. Like, you know, above that it's kind of management, but like you don't really have a plan.
So what was their advice for people going into radio or just looking for that graduate job?
I can answer for both of us because I know it's going to be the same. Don't be weird. If you are nice, normal, friendly, affable, likeable, and you approach networking in inverted commas in the correct way, i.e. not networking at all and just getting to know people and then building a sort of personal relationship which one day might become useful, you will be absolutely fine, and people will help you and people will recommend you for things. If you do it the other way around and you send weird emails all the time or bombard people or come up to people at events and talk to them only about how you need a job in radio and all
just
that.
It's important to be just nice.
Just be normal, yeah. Just be yourself, have a nice chat, because it's a really small industry.
Yeah, first impressions are really important. I have work experience person on my show most weeks, and I can usually tell within sort of the first half an hour of sitting with them and getting them to do stuff whether or not they're gonna get on well. And it's just simple things like just being friendly. Like, it's sometimes it can be sort of a bit intimidating and daunting when you're going into a radio station or anywhere to work for the first time, and you know, you don't know anyone and you sort of feel like you're a bit on eggshells a bit. But just be nice and just offer to help, but also you kind of got to work out the balance between being helpful being offered to help and using your initiative and stuff, but also knowing when to shut up,
yeah.
when to sit there and think, you know, they've got stuff to do here. I'm not going to get in the way, because it's you know, it's, you can be too helpful in a way. You can keep coming up and saying, is there anything I can do? And, you, and I've said, well, I've already told you there isn't anything to do at the moment. I'll give you something to do in a bit. So it's kind of getting that balance right. But just, yeah, generally just sort of using your common sense and being nice will get you a long way.
The big secret about any workplace, and especially in radio, is people are more likely to give you a job because they want to work with you than because you're qualified for the job. There's going to, whatever job it is, there's no job in radio that at least 10 other people couldn't do.
Yeah.
They're equally qualified and have probably applied. If that person's met you before, or you just get on well in the interview because you strike up a rapport, you're immediately in pole position over anyone else, because everyone's going to have equal qualifications. Everyone could do that job, especially when you're looking at an entry level thing. And people, you know, I include that myself in that. I'm likely to hire people because I go, oh, they'll be, I will get along working with them, because you have to see them every day. And that is the way it is.
But what about interviews? Dave Cribb explains his approach.
You can tell if you're interviewing someone whether they're qualified to do the job. You've got their CV probably, or if it's a presenting job, you've heard their demo, you know whether they can do it or they cannot. So I just tend to sit and chat to people and see if I like them and they're going to fit in with what we do and what we need from them. And that's all I really care about at that stage. If you've got to an interview, and this is different for me and for big corporations like the BBC, who will work completely differently and have formalised questions, and it's all very, you know, structured, and you earn points for your answers and all that sort of stuff. But for my company, for companies, definitely for the company we work for a lot of commercial stations especially, there'll be a lot more of that. Do you get on with them? Is this just going to work? Are you going to fit in here?
Camaraderie. You'll find yourself in situations that, as Dave says, the BBC is very different. There's lots of formal processes and forms and red tape to go through. But yeah, with commercial stations, production companies and stuff, you'll find yourselves in situations that are basically job interviews, but are not job interviews. So, you know, you've got to recognize, you've got to realize when you're going for a chat with someone that it is a job interview, but obviously there's no formal process to it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of mastering the art of kind of, again, just getting along with people, but also selling yourself at the same time and stuff. So learning to master the art of a quick chat is quite important.
Yeah.
When I visited Global, I bumped into David Hasselhoff, so he wanted to hear if they had any celebrity encounters themselves. Dave Cribb tells us his.
You'll find that happening quite a lot. Like, things like that, you'll just go, oh, that's a bit odd. I went to Coldplay did a gig at the Palladium recently, which is like a big charity thing. I think it was a charity thing. Anyway, it was basically just people that worked in radio that were there and competition winners. And we went with, it was when we were on Radio X, we went with the Radio X team, and I found myself in the urinals having a wee with Frank Skinner on one side and Moriarty from Sherlock on the other side. And you, at those moments, you just take look at yourself and you go, that's a bit weird. Yeah. This is a bit odd. You get used to that.
Before we finish, we wanted to ask our guests one more question in honour of a Royal Holloway favourite. What is their favourite VK colour?
I used to have them all the time, actually.
We had the same club in Nottingham as well. We used to go on different nights because we were at two different universities, but in different...
We had Wednesdays.
You had Wednesdays, we had Fridays. Apple, green.
Green.
Always for me, it was. I didn't trust the blue one. It like, feels like that one. Yeah, I mean, the apple one's probably no better, but I felt there was an element of health to it.
Lots of
orange
sugar.
Orange for me. Orange. Always orange, yeah. Mm. Sometimes, though, like, you do this thing where you get, like, three of them.
Oh, yeah.
And put them all into the same thing.
Super VK.
Yeah.
Insanity Radio are hosting our annual training day on Saturday, the 25th of February. Come to Arts Building Lecture Theatre 1 at 11 to learn about the radio industry from current professionals in jobs from presenting to social media. All are welcome. For more information, go to our Facebook page or search Insanity Radio Training Day on Eventbrite. You're listening to an Insanity Radio SRA podcast. Get in touch by tweeting at SRA and at We Are In Radio.
You've heard from two of our speakers, but we also welcomed some Insanity Radio alumni from across the years. Recent graduates Fia and Elena were joined by Susie Jameson from Create Productions, a previous assistant station manager, along with our other guest on the podcast. I'll let him introduce himself.
So my name is Matt Deegan. I'm the creative director of a new media and radio consultancy firm called Folder Media, and I run the children's radio station Fun Kids.
But what does a media and radio consultancy firm do?
So the great thing about radio is when one station is really successful, another station is unsuccessful, and that means they need some help. And that's really what we do, is we provide help to people to either help them do something they don't normally do or to think about the strategic direction of their business. And for radio stations, that's often about what comes out the speaker. So that might be the format they're in, music they play, presenters they have. Or more often now, they want to expand their business digitally. So it might be website or apps or email or social media marketing. And we help stations grow their business, either make some more money doing it or kind of grow their audience that way.
Fun Kids is one area where social media is key. Matt explains why it's so important to be multi-platform.
So Fun Kids is interesting. It's a radio station, national radio station on DAB, internet and mobile for children, primarily 6 to 12-year-olds, so this sort of CBBC audience-esque radio station. And that audience are natively multi-platform, so you know they have already grown up with tablets, mobile phones, Netflix. You know, the most popular kids' TV channel, in effect, is Netflix. And consuming content that way. So they may listen to Fun Kids in the kitchen or in the car, but if they hear something they like, they assume that it will also be available on an app or to watch on YouTube. And so we are, because of that audience, very aggressive in what we do digitally. So we've bothered to do that because our audience are of kids demand it.
So how did Matt start off with student radio at Insanity?
So I was here at the beginning, not right at the beginning. So the right at the beginning, we judge as four people went to an SRA conference, I think, in Edinburgh in like beginning of 97. And so I started in September 97 as a fresher living in Reed. And this is, I'll talk about the studio in a sec. But when I joined, there was a radio society. That was it. There wasn't a radio station, there was a radio society. And I wanted to do radio stuff. So I joined two things at Freshers Fair. I joined the Radio Society and the Ski Club. But unfortunately, they both did their things on a Wednesday. So I, of course, went skiing. And I did that for 8 weeks till I ran out of money. And then I started going to the radio meetings. And obviously, the Radio Society was desperate to get on air. So we broadcast... I think it's changed a bit now, but what was the DJ balcony? So we broadcast from there pretty much to speakers and occasionally to what was called Tommy's. I don't know if it's what it's called
yes,
now.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's called Tommy's. And they would mainly turn us off in Tommy's because it was dreadful. And then the guys who were running it, I was just a presenter, the guys who were running it did a month-long FM RSL. So we broadcast for 28 days on FM and we needed a studio. We literally didn't have a studio. So the only place they could put us was in a spare room in Founders on an accommodation floor. So some people had a radio station either side of them that broadcast for 24 hours a day with quite aggressive dance music at night. And they did not enjoy that month on air as much as we all did. So we did a lot of month RSLs. And then it's my second year as head of production, though I have no memory of making any production, but I was head of production. And then the third year, I was the station manager. So I was the second station manager at Insanity.
With all that experience under his belt, we wanted to hear how Matt made it to his current role in radio.
Well, so the thing I left at the radio station, so me and Rich, who was the first station manager, we together found the space in the Queen's Annex, and then I built the studio in the Queen's Annex, and I got the AM licence for the radio station, though I'd left before it launched. So I'd done lots of student radio stuff, a lot of SRA stuff. I've been to the conferences. I was the area rep, the regional officer for London. And through people I met through that, I ended up having a job as the administrator at the Radio Academy, which was like a trade body. And also when I was at university, I bid for a full-time FM radio licence with the guy who ran UCL's student radio station. And unsurprisingly, we were not successful, not having any knowledge experience to do that. But a radio group called GWR had invested in our stupid, crazy bid. And they'd given a guy called Gregory to us to ensure we didn't spend all their money on booze and drugs. And I went to work at the Radio Academy, and I'd stayed in touch with Greg, and he worked for this big radio group, and he got in touch one day and said, I need an assistant to bid for the licences. That's what he did. And no, not many people have done this in the UK, and oddly, you know, you have. So sort of a bit like a graduate job, would you like to come and do that? So of course, I instantly said yes to that. And then I worked with him at GWR, and GWR then acquired Capital Radio, so that became GCAP, so what's now Global. And I worked in the strategy team there, so I did all of the radio regulation for the group. I bid for all their radio licences, both analogue and digital, and other stuff, so the corporate stuff. So I didn't have a finance background particularly, but I would sit in very important meetings and not say anything, and learn a lot about how they ran a public company. You know, the division we were in was the sort of the financy bit, and I learned a lot about EBITDA, that's your earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, amortisation, and what that means. And that, but what they liked about me was I was a massive radio geek, and so from a regulatory perspective and also a buying and selling of radio stations perspective, it was my radio geekiness that they kind of quite liked. So did that, then we bid for these licences, were quite successful, and then me and Greg felt that we weren't necessarily being rewarded for the success we were bringing to that company. So we went and screw you, we're going to set up our own firm and do the same thing but for ourselves. And that's what we did. So one of our businesses, we own 10 digital radio multiplex licences that we won. And obviously Fun Kids and other things have expanded from it. So business and radio has always been a big part of me, and I think being the station manager, that's sort of business and radio. And I still think the bits that we did at Insanity were things I returned to a lot over the years, both good and bad. You know, it was good knowledge, good learning how to work with a team. So I was a good station manager, but I was quite a bad people person. I was quite autocratic, and I had an amazing assistant station manager who went out putting out all of my fires that I'd basically started. And what I learned quite a lot is that vision was important, but not the be-all and end-all of things. And I think a lot of that stuff has sort of stood me in good stead. And obviously, I run a radio station now, Fun Kids. 250,000 kids listen to that each week, and we have a relatively young presenting team who work on that. But it's not that different to when I was here. You know, you broadcast stuff, you put shows together. And I've worked at Classic FM, and I've worked at, you know, I've been very lucky in that I work with lots of other radio stations. There are more similarities than differences of doing student radio and proper radio than maybe you'd expect.
So what is his top tip for people looking for a job in the radio industry?
Listen to lots of radio. You know, there are. We did some work recently for some stations in Newcastle, and I was looking up how many stations are surveyed in radio and the audience figures in Newcastle. It's 54. So you know, 54 stations that a listener in Newcastle can choose to consume. And then you think about how many radio stations do you consume each week? Probably one or two. Like you don't have to like them or enjoy them, but you know, listen to something random for an hour and think about why are they doing that, or like, oh, that's interesting, why have they picked these songs, why does the presenter do that, and try and like grow your own knowledge. You know, there aren't many books to read about radio, but you can listen to a lot and reverse engineer it. And I think the other side is meet people. So you know, if you're not at this event, you're a loser and you should have come to the event, because there are seven people on the stage who would have met you and had a chat in the pub, and then you could have emailed them and asked a question, or gone in to see them at work, or asked for a coffee with them. And you know, those relationships and links are ones that build out and really help people build careers. I've done radio for 17 years, proper radio for 17 years. I know loads of people, and that's not just because I'm amazing, it's because you know, I've worked in lots of places, and staff changes, and I go to the pub with mate A and he works at station B, and we meet his friends. It's very rare that there isn't like, I can't get to any person in the radio industry not through one person that I know. So even if I don't know someone direct, oh, they know Dave, I can speak to Dave through it. So it is a small industry, and that's good and bad. So if you like really, really mess up, like people will know it's hard to hide. But if you're a nice person and people like you and you work hard, then that can spread as well. And you can say, oh, I've had this, you know, I've had this CV in from Claire. What was she like? And I can do that on WhatsApp and get a response within 2 minutes and then interview them. So no, it's a very interrelated industry. Incestuous is maybe another way to describe it.
So now Matt's in the industry, there's certainly some strange opportunities that have come his way.
I've done weird things. So I bid for a radio station in Manchester, a rock radio station in Manchester that went to XFM Manchester in the end. And I had to host an event where we'd promised a band that just didn't turn up. So all these people came basically to see the band rather than me talk about how our radio station would be good. And so just busk that. And then also I think it was the same day that our company had a massive takeover. And I was the first person in the entire business to be in front of press after this thing had been announced. And you're like, I'm totally inexperienced to do any of these things. But you just get on and do it. And that's the sort of... You know, radio doesn't have loads and loads of employees. So you have to... just get up to the mark and do stuff. I've done lots of interviews over the years for a variety of reasons. I did one for Radio 4 the other week on the media show, where I was arguing with Ian Lee about some random radio thing. And when they phoned me up, they basically wanted me to defend a thing which was sort of indefensible, and I said, oh, what's the other? Who's doing the for it? And they're like, oh, Ian Lee's doing the main bit. He's an amazingly talented presenter. I know a little bit, but don't really know. I thought it'd be quite fun to argue against him the other way. I don't particularly care either way, but it was fun. It was a fun bit of radio. It was on Radio 4 for 10 minutes, and we had a good chat before and afterwards in the studio. And like that's the sort of good bits about my stupid, crazy job, is that I can do those sorts of things.
And being back at Royal Holloway, we couldn't resist asking about his favourite moments from his university years.
Favourite Royal Holloway memories. Well, I think university is such an important part of your life, isn't it? And then you become an adult. You know, all of the adult things you sort of probably do for the first time at university, and relationships and romantic ones or just individuals that you work with. You learn a lot about yourself. I did media arts here. Which I was okay at, but I just got entranced by the radio station, so I didn't put that much effort in. Walking past here, though, one of the lecturers I had, he still has an office here, so he clearly never moved on. But I learned about studio, I learned about TV studio stuff and script writing, and they're bits which are very... So one of the things our company did, we wrote and made a pilot for CBBC, a drama pilot for CBBC, which I co-wrote with another alumni from here. And, you know, that was drawing on that term of script writing that I'd done and, you know, bits of studio production or drama production that I've done. So there were some valuable bits, but the main value that I got from being here was time. So really, you don't have that much work to do at university. You might think you have, but you don't really have that much. But you have time you can spend doing student radio or getting a part-time job or work experience, and when you need to eat, suddenly all you realise how much time you did used to have. But then the good bits, like winning station manager was fun, union nights were fun, we used to organise some really good ones for Insanity. I spent loads of money on fire eaters and stilt walkers for an Insanity night out, and the fire eaters looked really cool until security like put a cordon around them and a bucket of sand, which didn't kind of make them as cool as I thought they were in my head. What else? Breaking up with my girlfriend after the summer ball, that's a good memory. What else? A whole selection of things. So a DJ, I used to DJ in the union, and I think I don't obviously sort of do any of that anymore, and that was fun. That was a big part of my university life.
Many thanks to Matt and Dave and Dave for a great chat about all things radio. You can find them on Twitter as @Matt, @DaveCribb and @D_C_W. Before we go, here's what a few of our attendees thought of the training day.
It was really good and had party rings for the first time in a long time, and it was great.
I thought the training day was really great fun because we got to meet loads of people from the industry that we would not have the opportunity to meet otherwise. They were really friendly and they were incredibly helpful.
Yeah, they were so great. They listened to our demo, which was so useful to like get feedback on that, and also feedbacks on like interview style that they got from that demo, which has been really interesting. We've applied it to our show, and also just, you know, advice for the future, how to get internships and what have you. It was really good. It was a really good day.
I had a great day at the training day and I'm looking forward to the next event.
It was pretty good.
10 out of 10 would attend again.
That is the end of the Insanity Radio Training Day podcast. Thank you so much for listening and many thanks to Tom Gibbons and Alex Sundgren for your recording and interview skills. You can keep up with all things Insanity on our social media. We are at Insanity Radio on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and Snapchat. You can also find us on insanityradio.com. And we look forward to maybe seeing you at next year's Insanity Radio Training Day.
This is In Radio.